Welcome to the Anthony and Sabga Caribbean Awards for Excellence podcast, the sound of Caribbean excellence. Here, we feature events, conversations, and interviews with our laureates in science, art, entrepreneurship, and civic activism from around the Caribbean. You may find us online at www.ansacaribbeanawards.com or on Facebook, or visit our YouTube channel, ANSCAFE, ANSCAFE. This is a talk given by our 2015 Laureate in Science and Technology, Professor Suresh Narayan of Guyana, on five things hindering Caribbean development.
I want to focus on what I consider to be five major issues or challenges that faces our region, and which I will try to convince you provides a clarion call for science and technology to play that pivotal role, to be that fulcrum in providing a way forward for us. First and foremost, and these challenges don't represent any particular insight on my part. You will find that all of you know exactly what they are. And so I want to spend some time talking about why climate change does exist. I have a great friend, Professor Albert Binger, Jamaica. And Al Binger always says, boy, you know, this climate change thing is a real problem. The banana trees of the Caribbean just have to hear that the storm is coming, and they all lie down. So I think it's in Al's, you know, inimitable way, what he's saying is that we are quite vulnerable as a region for climate change. In Barbados, in many of our islands, we talk about increasing invasion of salinity as sea levels can rise. We talk about threats to flooding. We're seeing massive flooding in Trinidad. We talk about unpredictable agriculture. Guyana used to have a short and long rainy season. It seems like it's either rain all year or it's drought all year. Now, some of those TV networks will argue with you that the increasing number of storms that we're seeing, the increasing number of hurricanes, have no cause and effect linkage to climate change. What is incontrovertible is that, as the graph here shows, the number of serious hurricanes has been almost monotonically increasing in the region. So climate change is a serious matter. We all know this site very well, so let's not belabor the banana trees too much. What is climate change? Climate change revolves around the concept of carbon. Now, carbon in our atmosphere, first and foremost, is a good thing. Without carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, our climate would be uninhabitable, and we would all freeze to death. So the greenhouse effect really is an effect where gases like carbon dioxide sit in our atmosphere, and when solar radiation from the sun comes to Earth, those gases form an atmosphere where they trap that radiation. This allows our planet to heat up, and it allows it to be habitable. So carbon is a good thing. However, too much of a good thing is always a problem. Now, we all know that plants make tissues, they make grains, they make flowers and stems and leaves using photosynthesis. And photosynthesis really is just taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere in the presence of water and sunlight and making those tissues. Now, by so doing, plants remove about 120 gigatons of carbon dioxide every year from the atmosphere. But they put it right back. Plants also breathe like we do, and when they do, they breathe out carbon dioxide like we do. Plants also die. And when they decay, they return the carbon that they sequestered in their leaves and their stems and their flowers and their fruit back into the atmosphere. In fact, that rate of sequestration and the rate of release is just about evenly matched, with the exception that every year, that process puts about 1 gigaton of carbon into the soil, beneath the sea, etc. And it is that painstaking 1 or 2 gigatons of carbon that we sequester annually that has become our reserves of oil and gas. Now, this is very important to remember, because what are we doing with those reserves of oil and gas is we're releasing them. And as we release those reserves of oil and gas, we're releasing the carbon that's sequestered in them. Also, we are deforesting our planet, and we're removing, therefore, the number of photosynthetic machines that are available to us. So our ability to sequester carbon using plants and forests is also decreasing because of our changing land use. Because of that, it turns out we're putting about 6 gigatons of carbon per year. That's sequestered carbon over, say, 300 to 800 million years. We're putting that back at the rate of about 6 gigatons into the atmosphere. So therefore, we have a clear imbalance of the amount of carbon that we're sequestering and the amount that we're releasing. So there's really no mystery about climate change. It is very real and it's very measurable. And for the Caribbean, we better believe it because we're vulnerable. It is very, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about this, but it's very, very important that we understand this and that our people who trade in futures, our people who are responsible for things, worrying about things like balance of payments, our leaders and our economists begin to understand carbon as a commodity. Carbon as a tradable commodity, carbon as a commodity whose futures can be bought. Because if we don't do that, we're going to be left behind. And in fact, we already are being left behind. Am I being crazy? No. Several years ago, Guyana had already negotiated several hundreds of millions of dollars of United States dollars as payment from Norway for Guyana's ability to sequester carbon. So the carbon markets is a very real thing and can have tremendous impact on economies like ours. The next challenge that the Caribbean is facing, clearly, is expensive energy. Now, we're all sitting in the Caribbean, and I'm wearing a woolen jacket, and we're all sitting here, and some of the ladies are wearing cardigans and scarves because we're chilling this room to very unnatural temperatures. So we have a problem. We're very profligate with our use of energy in the Caribbean. But that energy is also expensive. And where else do we know that more than Barbados, right? Last week in the newspapers, Barbados is paying the third highest cost for petrol at the pumps. Third highest, little Barbados. This is a problem. And here's the problem also. The region's use of energy has also been monotonically increasing. It's an inexorable gluttony for energy. And it's unavoidable. There's no need to feel abashed about it, because the act of living in today's world means consumption of energy. And the prediction, of course, is that it will continue to rise at that kind of trajectory. Here's the problem. Our region is a net importer of petroleum. Okay, other than Trinidad and Tobago, Suriname, and actually a very small amount from Barbados, the region doesn't produce energy. Of course, Guyana has just announced 4 billion barrels of reserves and counting, and so that will change the balance a little bit. But it does not change the balance in the context of the Caribbean, because the Caribbean has stubbornly refused to acknowledge that it's an archipelago with individual countries which are unsustainable because of their size and populations. So when one country does well, the region doesn't do well. When Trinidad was king, Guyana sat there with rice that it couldn't sell in the open market, and Trinidad imported rice. This is the kind of silliness that the Caribbean does. And I'll be talking a little bit more about this silliness, because it's time we belled the cat. Because the region is unsustainable unless the region collaborates and cooperates. But energy is a problem. We're a net importer. Now, look at what we do. The Caribbean relies on petroleum for 80% of its energy demand. 80%. That is not so with the rest of the world. So we lag the world. We are importing this stuff. We don't produce this stuff. And we don't seek alternative ways of generating the electricity we need. But I see that as an opportunity. Look at the amount of generation capacity that exists in Caribbean countries. Clearly, if we had science-minded, technology-minded, entrepreneurial people, we'd be addressing this lack of renewable generational capacity in the Caribbean. So I see that as a tremendous opportunity for science and technologists and entrepreneurs. In fact, it's very lamentable. If you look at Latin America and the Caribbean, only 4% of the total announcements of foreign direct investment in renewable energy was received by the Caribbean in 2017. That's an indictable number. That's a scary, scary, scary number. Because what it means, the countries are paying, Barbados is certainly paying a serious price for energy. There's nothing wrong with Barbados's money for energy. It has a huge opportunity to convert its petroleum use into renewable energies. Yet the foreign direct investment hasn't landed on Barbados' shores to make that transition. We have to ask ourselves why. Part of the reason I wish to suggest is that we have not spent the time to develop our knowledge, absorptive capacity, and labor related to science and technology. So foreign direct investment dollars do not find absorptive capacity here and in Guyana and in Suriname and in all of our Caribbean countries in order to land here in those areas. But it gets worse. In Barbados alone, and I'm not picking on Barbados, I thought I'd better show some numbers for Barbados since I'm here. But this is really true across most of the Caribbean. 48% of the electricity consumption in Barbados hotels are for air conditioning. Now, I've stayed over the years at maybe 6 or 7 hotels. Not a single one of those hotels had simple measures like you put your key into a slot and the air conditioning comes on. You leave, you take your key out, and you save on air conditioning. Simple, simple interventions we're not using in the Caribbean. What I see there, absorptive capacity. I see opportunities for entrepreneurs. I see opportunity for science-minded, technology-minded people. Am I beginning to sound like a broken record? Yes, because we don't do it. Why don't we do it? Because we don't have the people who are trained and attuned to that. And, you know, in some of these cases, it's really not about reinventing the wheel. It's not about finding solutions. The solutions are there. It's simply about technology transfer. And lest we forget, electricity and access to electricity per capita is directly proportional to human development indices. Those countries at the top of the United Nations Human Development Index are all countries that have significant access per capita to electricity. Electricity to manufacture, electricity for leisure, electricity for our art and for our music and for our lifestyles. So, climate change, expensive energy. The next one is food security. Well, you all know this, right? This is in the news all the time. The Caribbean has a crippling dependency on imported food. Look at these numbers. These are scary, scary, scary numbers. The graph on my right and your left are real numbers. That's what we pay for food right now. $4.5 billion annually. That's what we pay for food right now. And look at the graph on your right. That's what we're going to pay for food if we keep the trajectory. How are we going to do this? How are we going to pay for this food? If it's not a question that we're grappling with, then I think we've buried our heads in the sand. What is our productive capacity? We dropped in productive capacity in 2005, agricultural productive capacity, and we've never, ever gotten back on that horse, ever. We've percolated at the same levels, practically, since 2005 for production, whilst, don't forget, our demand for food and agriculture has increased almost exponentially. So there's something wrong. We have a mismatch. And then on the other graph, it lists the things that we import most. Now look at these things, ladies and gentlemen, and tell me that if we injected a bit of science and technology into our agriculture, we could not be producing those things. There's not a single systemic natural resource reason why any of those things cannot be produced in the Caribbean. You can't say, well, we don't have steel. You can't say that we don't have platinum. You can't say that we don't have silver. These are things that we have. Arable land, fresh water, sunlight, a growing season, which outstrips the growing season of the smallest country in the world with the largest efficiency of agriculture, the Netherlands. And we can't do it here. It's because, again, we do not have a culture of science and technology applied to production. So, climate change, energy, food. The next one is labor. Lovely to hear that the University of West Indies, and well-deserved applause in finding its way into the top 5%, number 34 in Latin America and the Caribbean. That is remarkable. But we're still not reaching and educating all of our people. This is not leveling anything at UWI. In the Caribbean, our institutions, with the exception of UWI in three countries, are fractured. They don't collaborate with each other. They don't have, well, they do collaborate, but not very effectively. They don't have common standards. They don't have common curricula. You've got very sort of siloed approaches to education. And we only have 16.5 million people in the English-speaking Caribbean. So this fractured way, this fractured, almost fractious way of operating in the Caribbean is leading to exacerbations in global trends. What are the, now let's look at this, for example. These are tourism numbers. These are how many people each country in the Caribbean employs in the tourism industry. With the exception of Guyana and Trinidad and Haiti, almost all of those countries are in double figures, and many of them are over 50%. Now, I have no problem with tourism. What kind of jobs do we have in tourism, ladies and gentlemen? Who owns the capital in tourism? To where does the generation of wealth flow in tourism? How much of it leaves the shores of the Caribbean? How much of it trickles down into real economic impact into the Caribbean? And by having our people focused on tourism, what is the opportunity cost? What is that opportunity cost? Could they have been the next crop pathologist? Could they have been the next solar specialist? Could they have been the scientist that figures out how to effectively and pragmatically harness sargassum from our beaches? And what about the returns on that investment? I'm here to tell you, those returns are much more rewarding. And so we must wean ourselves off of jobs at the bottom of the economic ladder, where the capital and the wealth is owned by an expatriate system. No, I'm not an anarchist, but I'm a realist. And it's very important to examine these things. But here's what's happening with the world. In the majority of the world's major economic powers, the United States, but let's say North America and Western Europe, Japan, the birth rate has not been up to the demand for productivity. So in all of those countries, what we have is a serious and severe labor shortage in about 5 years to one decade. Crippling labor shortage in terms of skilled labor. In fact, the only place in the world where we have an excess of labor is in sub-Saharan Africa, which is afflicted by 60% AIDS and a great level of grade 3 education. Where's that skilled labor going to come from? Well, many of it is taken from you. The few scientists that we produce in the Caribbean, there are two ways you can live in North America, you know, if you don't have relatives to sponsor you. There are two ways. One of those ways is you have intellectual capital, and the second way is you have financial capital. So if you have money to invest, you can self-sponsor. And if you have an advanced degree in areas like science and technology and STEM, you can go to Canada. Why does this make sense? Because Canada needs skilled people. So as fast as we can produce them, if we don't have the systems and the absorptive, and again, we were talking about this just minutes ago, absorptive capacity here, those jobs, those people leave. So labor is a significant problem, and it has to start with Caribbean integration. It has to start with a policy-driven investment in STEM education. I was just talking to Dr. Landis. He told me his science department building is 60 years old. Well, it was built in the 1960s. Badly needs to be rebuilt. We should be rebuilding that. Okay, so four of the five things, right? Climate change, energy, labor, food. The last one I want to talk about is foreign direct investment. All of these countries share a common disaster in terms of their origins. All of us. All of us started our lives as colonies with slaves and indentured laborers who were not brought here to create countries, as to steal something from Mr. Ramcharitar. They were brought here to live in plantations divided in order to, in a lovely Guyanese book by Dr. Walter Rodney, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, fits extremely well into the context of the Caribbean. But here we are. We've emerged out of this common disaster, and we're this collection of nations in the Caribbean archipelago. We have low GDP. We have no plantocracy with large amounts of money and capital to invest in us. So this region needs foreign direct investment. There's no other way. We don't have the money. We've got to attract that money. How are we going to attract that money? We've got to have the right kinds of labor, the right kinds of ideas, the right kind of innovation. This is the reality of our foreign direct investment. And you know, sometimes the newspapers say all kinds of silly things. The reality is, if you look, the most important point here is the graph here. This is Guyana, Barbados, Jamaica, and Trinidad. Foreign direct investment since 2011. CARICOM as a whole. And then the percentage of CARICOM divided by the rest of Latin America and the Caribbean, and the percentage of CARICOM divided by the world. We exist at a 0.22%. 0.22%. That means 0.0022, absolutely, of the amount of foreign direct investment in the world. It means that the amount of foreign direct investment that comes into this region is a trickle. It's minuscule. And it's minuscule. Also, all of the foreign investment that comes into this part of the world is greenfield, meaning that it comes in, it starts something new. Why does it have to start something new? Because we are not creating our own innovation-led opportunities here that can then get acquired or merged. So they're not by mergers or acquisitions, they're greenfield investments. And that's an indicting figure as well. Well, I moved to Ontario. Ontario's got a human development index of about 9.25, right? Almost 0.3 ahead of the Caribbean. The GDP per capita of CARICOM is about $6,400. In Ontario, it's about $60,000. That's a big, big gap, right? Look at the foreign direct investment. Ontario has three times the foreign direct investment of the CARICOM countries. And why am I comparing them? They have almost similar populations. Similar populations. Ontario, however, is not fractured. Ontario has 23 universities. We have maybe five. Ontario's universities have to adhere to a provincial standards. Ours don't. Ontario universities must collaborate in order to get funding. Our doesn't. Do you begin to see some challenges here? So, I want to suggest then that in the balance of the issues that we have, unskilled labor, untrained labor, financial crises, low FDI, energy insecurity, profligate approach to energy consumption, food insecurity, and the looming, gloomy world of climate change, I want to suggest that one very compelling way of addressing this is having a population that understands science, adopts scientific solutions, and has assertive capacity for innovation-driven entrepreneurship. We need to develop a cadre of skilled labor for emerging industries in the food, energy, and higher value sustainable space. And it's not okay to just grow food. We must value add food. We must add value to that food at home. At home, because shipping commodities means a race to the bottom. And all of the wealth leaves the shores of the Caribbean. Technology and science can be a great leveler of the proverbial playing field. It can allow us access to high-paying, innovative jobs and businesses simply because we're skilled. Simply because we're skilled. It's a great way of climbing up the ladder without having to have very wealthy parents. I can tell you, I grew up in an extremely poor society, and I've brought 46 companies to market in science and technology. Well, not all of them did well, but enough of them did well that I can still drive what I want. So it's important. It's important. If we make it accessible and all in our tertiary institutions, it can be transformative because it will create a critical mass. It can lead to increasing foreign direct investment as a function of the acquisition of technology startups. It can provide the skilled labor needed to encourage innovation-led investments. And it can focus on high value rather than commodities. I want to argue with you that our tourism product is a commodity. Every single time Europe catches a cold, Barbados is strung out. Barbados gets leukemia, okay? Because those tourist dollars don't come. We have no control over when Europe catches a cold. Do we really want to continue to depend on 50% of our employment? I mean regionally, on tourism? So we have to match science and technology with investment, but let's not forget that we are an archipelago of only 16.5 million souls. No single country in this region has the critical mass to do it on our own. But I make this call. If we don't start to begin to have some sort of federation, some sort of policy-driven collaboration, give up, go home. 750,000 people in Guyana will not compete no matter how much oil and gas they have. Cannot. They're the size of a small city in the U.S. Right? No absorptive capacity. We need to look at governance. We need to be careful about how we invest, and we need, by all means, to avoid the scourge of corruption. Small societies and small islands like ours lend themselves to corruption of all sorts. All sorts. And we are a particularly bad region for that. So we need to look at it. However, having said all that, I'm an optimist. I believe that the future is bright because it's about choices. And choices is about information. And choices is about making informed decisions, not simply by blindly following something because somebody is scaremongering, but by making informed decisions. So we've got to make informed choices. We've got to make informed choices, and we have to do. We just can't plan, right? The second thing is, make no small plans, because small plans lack the will to stir people's souls. If at all you're going to do something, do it because it's grandiose and it's fun and you can put all of your energy into it. Yeah? Do it because the Caribbean is a special place. Do it because we live here.
Thank you for joining us. You may find us online at www.ansacaribbeanawards.com, on Facebook or on YouTube.